My name is Rachel Sikonik.
And I'm Hannah Winters.
Both certified clinical technologists from the microbiology lab here at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And we welcome you to the Microside Chat podcast.
In today's episode, we'll break down what respiratory season really means, why cases rise during colder months, how viruses spread, and what prevention strategies actually work. Whether you're a healthcare professional, a parent, or just someone trying to avoid that next lingering cough, this conversation will give you the context and tools to navigate the season ahead.
To provide expertise to our conversation today, we have Dr. Erica Prohaska, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Thank you, Dr. Prohaska, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
To start off, let's talk about the big three. What are we seeing in the kids? What respiratory viruses do you most commonly see in pediatric patients right now?
Over the winter season, we see a lot of viruses. And I think by the big three, you probably are referring to influenza virus, COVID-19, and RSV. Those are the ones that we traditionally have, you know, monitored over the past couple of years in the winter, and typically we have seen surge in the winter. We just saw a large number of influenza A cases. Those numbers are fortunately starting to come down. However, there's two types of influenza A, influenza B, and so it remains to be seen how much influenza B that we'll see during the season. But all of these are commonly presenting not only in the hospital, but also in daycares, in urgent cares, in outpatient pediatric clinics. So there's just a lot of viral illnesses going around every single winter, and right now is no exception.
Sure. We want to know, why is this different than any other time of year? I mean, we think of winter and we just think about getting a cough. So can you speak to that?
So viruses like different, you know, seasons for different reasons. One reason that we see more viruses during the wintertime is people tend to be cooped up inside together. You know, so that's one explanation. Also, drier air can make it easier for some viruses to transmit rather than others. Whenever we have an endemic virus, there's typically, you know, times of the year that it tends to surge more than others. And right now we're seeing the viruses that tend to thrive during the winter. There are other viruses that typically happen in the late summer. You know, for example, hand, foot, and mouth disease or Coxsackie virus is more of a late summer, early fall type of virus.
And are kids more susceptible to these illnesses? And what kind of role do they play in the spread?
So that is a $1 million question, because there's so many ways that kids contribute to the spread. I think anyone who's cared for a child knows that, you know, they will gladly share their secretions with anyone. So, you know, lack of hand hygiene, you know, inability to blow their nose. I mean, those are some of the big reasons that kids contribute to the spread. Also, we anticipate that in the first year of children being in school, whether that's pre-K, daycare, kindergarten, they're going to get about 12 to 17 viruses in that first year that they're around other kids. Wow. So some of it is not having been exposed to viruses before. You know, we often see parents who are feeling very frustrated because the first year that their child in school is, they're constantly sick. And the question is, does my child have an immunodeficiency? Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of times it's no, they just haven't necessarily been exposed to those viruses before, and they're getting immunity to them. So some children just don't have immunity yet, and they get a lot of viruses. And then in terms of severity of illness, you know, children do tend to have more severe infections with some viruses in the first couple years of life. An example would be influenza. Another example would be RSV.
Hmm. Very interesting. We were wondering if you could share a story about a child who came in with what seemed like a simple cold, but it turned out to be something more serious.
I can certainly, you know, come up with an example of a case, because there's just been a lot of patients who I've seen with viruses that then progress to something more serious. And I do want to make the caveat that kids get viruses all the time, and the vast majority of kids are totally fine. So for the parents listening, you don't need to put your kids in a bubble, and I would not recommend that approach. However, it is possible for some viruses to affect the way that our body then fights bacterial infections. And so what we do see a lot in the winter are what we call secondary bacterial infections, meaning that it's a bacterial infection that happened after a virus. Influenza is really classic for this, because It can really impair the way that the body, you know, clears out bacteria from the airways, and can set up a situation where normal bacteria in the nose and throat can become an infection in the lungs. So we do see really classically, like a child who's home who feels really sick. Maybe their parent doesn't even know that they have influenza. You know, they're just home from school because they have a fever. They seem to be getting better, and then they get another fever, and they're not eating and they're not drinking, and then they start breathing more heavily, and they come into the hospital with a large pneumonia or lung infection. You know, that's something that we see this time of year all the time, where there's a history of a recent virus, but then a child is coming in with a bacterial infection that requires antibiotics.
So you've mentioned the big three that you're seeing in pediatric patients: flu, RSV, and COVID. I want to talk a little bit about a specific bug that we've seen on the rise in Maryland, which is mumps. What does this look like, and how does it impact patients?
So mumps virus, we are seeing an uptick in cases, you know, right now. It is a vaccine-preventable infection, so that's good news. If you are up to date on your immunizations, most likely you've received two doses of measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine, and that does cover mumps. That's one of the M's in MMR. And we know that vaccination provides protection to the vast majority of people who get the vaccine, but protection can wane over time. So a lot of times these breakthrough infections that we see in vaccinated individuals, they tend to be, you know, adults, not children. However, even breakthrough infections in vaccinated individuals are less severe than in someone who's not immunized. So I, again, put that out there for reassurance to listeners. Mumps is classically a swelling of the salivary glands or the submandibular glands. So people look like they have chipmunk cheeks when they have mumps. And it can also, you know, cause other less common manifestations, such as swelling around the testicles. That's another manifestation in people who have already gone through puberty. That happens in about 1/3 of men who get mumps. But again, the symptoms are typically less severe in someone who has been vaccinated.
It's very interesting. You know, you'll have a lot of people in the population who will say, I got vaccinated, but I still got the flu. So what's the point? So can you share a little bit of the purpose of vaccination and how it can clearly make a difference?
Now, influenza vaccines, time and time again, have been shown to decrease the risk of hospitalization and the risk of bad outcomes during a hospitalization, even if one gets influenza. Now, do I wish that we had an influenza vaccine that kept me from getting the flu, like, altogether? Yes, absolutely. I wish that were the case, but that's just not the world that we live in. You can still get a breakthrough infection. However, that vaccine does prevent there from being worse outcomes. And people can get very, very sick from influenza. So I actually always feel a huge sigh of relief when my kids get vaccinated for influenza, because I know how severe that it can be, and it is modified by the vaccine. You may also read about a medication called oseltamivir, also known as Tamiflu, that people sometimes can get for influenza. That has been shown to decrease the duration of illness and improve outcomes among people who are really susceptible to the flu. But, you know, when I have personally looked at the data for vaccination versus the data of oseltamivir or Tamiflu, I mean, vaccination just performs really well at preventing bad outcomes. So yes, there is a medication that's available to you, you know, should you choose to take it and if your doctor recommends it. However, vaccination is still like our main guard against bad influenza.
So just to reiterate, it's not preventing infection, it's preventing hospitalization or in the goal to? Or
so it can prevent both, right? Okay. It can prevent infection. However, we do see breakthrough infections among vaccinated people, but typically, people who have been vaccinated against influenza are going to have less severe symptoms. However, it can also prevent infection as well.
That's very important.
And when you're dealing with parents and you're explaining the role and the importance of vaccines, what are some common concerns or worries that these parents express to you?
It's really going to be different for different parents. I think my approach as a pediatrician has generally been, when somebody is expressing a concern to me, they're telling themselves something to me that is important to them. And what I mean by that is, typically people are saying something about their identity as a parent that is important, or a value that is important to them as a parent. And I think coming at it with that framework has made it easier for me to find a common ground. So an example that I'll give is, a lot of parents don't want to put their child through something that might be uncomfortable or might make them fussy. There is an instinct to protect. And that can, if we get to that common ground of, okay, you don't want to do an immunization today because you're concerned about fever or you're concerned about discomfort or you don't want to see your baby cry, let's talk about how we protect our children in general. There will come a day where you have a 16-year-old who wants to go out with their friends instead of study for a final. And you'll have to tell them, no, you have to study for this final. And they may in the short term say, I hate you and yell at you. That's normal, but that's also being a parent. We put our children through some short-term discomfort for a long-term gain. And that's what vaccines are. And I will say, actually, kids do pretty well with vaccines, particularly the way that they're administered in pediatricians' offices right now. I'm always really amazed at how when nurses give my kids vaccines, how fast they are. But the anxiety around it, can be very real for parents. And I think trying to address where that anxiety is coming from, what is important to you as a parent that's causing that anxiety, and how can we recognize that and then provide more information that helps, us come to an understanding of what the goal of vaccines are and how they may align with your goals as a parent, after all, has been the most helpful way that I have had conversations with parents.
I think something to speak to and something I personally admire is how much compassion you bring to these parents, because it can be very scary, and I love that point of view, so thank you for sharing that. I guess to close up our episode, because this has been very informational and we've both enjoyed it very much, what's one thing you wish every parent understood about respiratory infections and vaccines, or just a general message you'd like to put out there?
The general message that I would like to put out there is that, it's okay if you forget a year to get your kid immunized for influenza. I think that that's one thing that parents sometimes don't recognize. They think like, oh, if I missed it, I can't bring my kid in. It's too late in the season. It's really hard having kids. There's a ton of things pulling you in different directions. There will sometimes be parents that say, well, I wanted to get my kid immunized for influenza, but then they got sick and so they couldn't get it because they were throwing up. Sure, I'm sure your pediatrician would appreciate you not bringing a vomiting child into the office for an immunization visit, but even though it's a little later in the season, you could still make an appointment and go get immunized. I think that's one of the most frequent things, that I hear from parents that they're not sure about. We always advise get immunized before the, influenza and COVID-19 surge, really starts. It's typically, what we are advising. However, it's always worth talking to your pediatrician or your family medicine provider about whether, you could still get immunized a little later in the season too. Obviously, there's a certain point where it may no longer be beneficial in the season, but we do encourage you to continue to ask that question.
Great. So you encourage asking questions to their providers.
Yes. And particularly if there's any concern about, vaccinations altogether, we always really hope that you're going to talk to your pediatrician or family medicine provider about it. That's why we got into this business. We want to talk to people. We want to provide information. We want to provide, as much information as you want to listen to. So if you do have questions or concerns, we do really hope that you reach out to your primary care provider.
That's great. Thank you so much. That concludes today's Microside Chat Podcast, Episode 2, on respiratory illnesses with our expert, Dr. Erica Prochaska. My name is Rachel Sakonik.
And I am Hannah Winters,
your host of Microside Chat Podcast. And we'll see you next time.